The following podcast was recorded in Nice during the 13th meeting of the European Society of Coloproctology in September 2018. The interview refers to an article by the title "Role of Transanal Irrigation in the Treatment of Anterior Resection Syndrome" by Jacopo Martellucci and colleagues, which was published in Techniques in Coloproctology, July 2018, Volume 22, Issue 7. Enjoy the podcast. Welcome to another podcast of Techniques in Coloproctology. I'm Giuseppe Gagliardi, the co-editor-in-chief, and we're here in Nice, gathered at the European Society of Coloproctology. And this podcast is going to be about low anterior resection syndrome. I'm going to introduce my guests, Nicola Fernhead from Cambridge University Hospital, Jacopo Martellucci from Firenze University Hospital, who are two low anterior resection syndrome experts. And we have two patients, Jeannie from New Hampshire and Kirsty from Dunedin, New Zealand. For people who don't know, New Hampshire is in the United States. I can start off by asking Nicola Fernhead about what is the definition of low anterior resection syndrome.
Thanks, Giuseppe. Low anterior resection syndrome is really the cluster of symptoms that happen to a patient after they have had surgery for rectal cancer. So they've had the rectum removed and an anastomosis made, which is usually quite low down, and they've lost the function of the rectum. If they have an ileostomy and the ileostomy is closed, bowel continuity is restored again, and they then have to learn to deal with a whole range of things that vary according to the patient in terms of how much they're affected. So the sort of things that we see in low anterior resection syndrome are problems occasionally with diarrhea, often with incontinence, and that incontinence can range from everything from not being able to hold flatus to leakage and liquid incontinence to occasionally loss of whole solid stool, all symptoms that can be very distressing for the patient. But there's a bit more than that as well. A lot of patients talk about difficulty with evacuation, spending a lot of time on the toilet, unable to actually get things out, or feeling that they haven't completely emptied at the end of going to the toilet. For others, they find that they go to the toilet, feel they've finished, and then need to go very quickly again. A lot of patients talk about clustering and fragmentation, and that is really important in terms of their lifestyle and how it affects their lifestyle afterwards. But there's some other things as well. Some patients, a few, but certainly a significant proportion, talk about pain after defecation and difficulty with feeling that that there's something wrong down below. And all of these things then also have an impact on their quality of life. So interference with ability to function as normal in society, often affecting their work, often affecting their intimacy and sex lives, and really having a huge impact on the patient because they have to cope with a whole lot of things which they were often not expecting prior to cancer surgery.
You mentioned two factors, pain and sexual activities, that are not really part of the so-called low anterior resection score. So, can you define low anterior resection syndrome only as fitting the low anterior resection score?
So, as you know, Giuseppe, we've had a very well-validated low anterior resection syndrome score, which was developed in Denmark, has been validated throughout the world, it's been translated into a multitude of language, and is widely used to measure objectively what happens to patients with low anterior resection syndrome. Unfortunately, we have discovered as clinicians who use the LARS score, it's known as LARS for low anterior resection syndrome, who use the LARS score, that actually it doesn't change with time, and it also doesn't change with intervention. So whilst it's very good at measuring at a snapshot in time what's happening to a patient, it doesn't actually describe what's happening to them on a trajectory, on a journey with changes of treatment. And the reason for that is that it doesn't include all those other aspects which are really important to patients, particularly quality of life, aspects like pain and certainly impact of having LARS on other aspects of one's life. And so that's actually why we are all in Nice today, and that's because we have been developing a new LARS score over the last year. We've been working internationally with partners across the entire globe. We have had enormous numbers of patients involved. 114 patients participated in the final round, having gone through all three rounds. We've had international consultations with patients, some of them online in the US and Australasia, but we've also done face-to-face consultations with patients in Denmark, in the UK, and in Spain. And today, we are actually going to bring everything together to talk this afternoon about what will go into that final consensus and how we might actually better explain LARS with patients actually telling us all about it.
Thank you, Nicola. Now, without going into the details of what surgery you had, I would like to ask our two patients today what their symptoms are. And so, to complete this section about symptoms, Jeannie, can you please tell us what your symptoms are?
Certainly. So a lot of what Nicola said, frequency being probably the most common challenge for me. Early on, I was in the bathroom probably 20 plus times a day, and that's not an underestimate either. Oftentimes dealing with the clustering, that feeling of incomplete evacuation that I would think I was done and go to move on with my day and end up winding right back where I started. Flatulence was a big concern, I mean, especially outside of the home and in the work environment. It was completely unable to be controlled. And then, similar to what Nicola was saying, for me, I think more importantly to encumber all that was the exhaustion, anxiety, and a constant state of mind of thinking about when my bowels were going to move and where I was going to find a bathroom, and, you know, incorporating my relationship with my husband, plans for travel, plans for job promotions at work. A lot of those symptoms of quality of life have held me back from enjoying most of those things. So it's been a pretty intense ride for about 9 years now.
Thank you very much. And Kirsty, I'll switch to you. What are or were your symptoms, if they changed at all?
Thank you. Similar to what's already been discussed, I'm just 3 years into my apprenticeship into LARS, although for the first 2 years I had no name for these symptoms I was experiencing. My main ones would be clustering, frequency, and incomplete emptying. For me, this tends to be in the evening time, so my evenings are spent in my bathroom a lot of the time, which can have detrimental effects on relationships, say with my husband, because by the time I'm finished, he's often going to bed. So it's like, hi, bye. Also, loss of control of flatus can be affecting more so in the workplace. I'm a nurse. That loss of control is and not being able to get that under control is difficult with daily life.
You also then spoke about which ones are the ones affecting you the most. So would you say what affects you the most? I mean, they're all affecting you equally, or is there any that affects you the most? Or
I think they overlap. Clustering, frequency, and incomplete emptying. They're together. This is what keeps me in the bathroom and affects my life.
And Jeannie, what are the symptoms that affect you the most?
I would have to agree with Kirsty. It's the frequency, clustering, and often I didn't mention it, but I also have had bouts of incontinence, and most of the time it would be unsuspecting, and that's a major effect on your well-being when that happens.
I'm going to switch to Nicola and ask her about what treatments are available today for low anterior resection syndrome.
Thanks, Giuseppe. Well, as Jeannie and Kirsty have both told you, there's an enormous impact on the patient, and often they're unprepared for what happens. So the very first thing you need to do is make sure that the patient knows what's going to happen to their bowel function when they have cancer surgery. So not just to concentrate on how to treat the cancer, but also to explain to the patient what's going to happen to them in terms of function. So it starts right at the beginning with really good communication to make sure that the patient is prepared. Once they've had their surgery and bowel function has been restored, what you really need to do then is actually take a very detailed history. Be very sure what it is that is affecting their lives most. We've heard slightly different stories, and that means that there are going to be different coping strategies that need to be directed to the patient on a very individualized basis. So a detailed history to start with. And then after that, you may want to think about of how you might help that patient depending on what their symptoms are. A simple explanation about why it's happened goes a long way, because the minute patients actually understand what it is that they're trying to deal with, then actually they're often that bit further along the road towards coping. As a clinician, we start with some very simple things. We've talked about the things that we can change easily. So in some cases, you can change stool consistency. For some patients who have difficulty emptying, you might want to soften the stool. For those who are having lots of problem with leakage, you actually might want to firm things up. So the use of a good dietitian and maybe some bulking agents, things like Imodium to help with incontinence and leakage, very useful. And you might want to talk a little bit about how they actually can strengthen the pelvic floor. And there are lots of different ways of doing that. For example, we start with just pelvic floor physiotherapy, teaching patients exercises in terms of strengthening the pelvic floor. And that applies to both men and women. This is not something which just affects women, it affects men as well. Biofeedback therapy has a lot to offer, and I certainly find that in my patient group, a lot of patients benefit enormously from the time spent with a specialist in biofeedback who helps them not just with the strengthening exercises, but also with trying to manipulate their bowel function to get it exactly right for them. And then beyond that, if those simple measures don't work, we need to think about other things depending on what the patient needs. And I think probably the best thing to do now is to actually ask Jacopo about what he thinks about some of the more advanced treatments that we use for patients with LARS.
Jacopo.
Well,
you've been called into question.
I don't know if both of this treatment could be defined as old treatment, new treatment, because transanal irrigation has a very long history since we perform it with the sheep bladder. Now we have really effective methods to perform it, and transanal irrigation is probably one of the most affecting treatment that we can propose to this patient, because a well done transanal irrigation may give about 36, 48 hours of life to this patient, and of being quite sure that they will not have another bowel movements, another need to run to the toilet. So it's very important.
I would agree with that, actually. My experience of offering transanal irrigation to patients is very similar. It's about regaining control. It becomes a coping strategy. It does, as you know, take some time to actually carry out the transanal irrigation, but then gives them a period of control afterwards where they actually don't have to deal with a lot of the symptoms. Some patients have used enemas, of course, as well in some lines, and I know in the States, Jeannie will tell us more in a few minutes, that a lot of patients particularly use what they could term medical enemas in order to deal with the problem. But tell us a little bit more about transanal irrigation and your experience of using it.
Transanal irrigation is very different from a simple enema, because you can control the pressure, and it gives something like a rehabilitation of the bowel, and nothing else could give this, because all the other treatments, rehabilitation, sacral neurostimulation, pelvic floor exercises, are not able to control transit, they just can control the last part, the sphincteric part of the problem, but not the transit. So the only thing to that cannot manage the reflexes that the patient has after a meal, for example, we have no other thing. We just can use this solution, because we have seen that if we perform it early after a resection, there's a rehabilitative role, and this patient have lower symptoms after some month, compared to patients that are give to himself and alone with these problems.
So in that case, are you suggesting that we should be using transanal irrigation as a preventative measure to actually prevent LARS from being established by offering it to patients very early on after their rectal cancer surgery?
We know that most of our patients have some symptoms after the procedure, and some of them may recover the symptoms, but we don't know who they are. So maybe we can introduce both pelvic floor rehabilitation and a transanal irrigation, and then after maybe 6 months or 1 year, we can stop and see how the things are going on, and then decide if we need something else, or it's okay.
Published in Techniques in Coloproctology, Jacopo's work on transanal irrigation and early transanal irrigation after surgery. And so I invite everybody to look up the article. And can you quantify the improvement of transanal irrigation in that paper that you published with us?
It is very difficult to quantify it, because we have some score, that is the large score that we already mentioned, that is not so good to evaluate the evolution of symptoms. And we use the Memorial Sloan Kettering score that is quite complex to use in a daily activity. But most of all, we use the SF-36, that is a quality of life score. And despite every score we use, the thing that we know is that every item was better after transanal irrigation, because patient gained another time the control of their bowel activity. And this is the most important thing, because we already heard that the problem is not incontinence, the problem is clustering, the problem is frequency, the problem is not knowing when the bowel movement can arrive. So this is the main impact on quality of life. If we take away this problem, we gain another time, life.
I was just going to say, everybody in the room is nodding, which is just to give you an idea of how much agreement there is, particularly from our patients. So shall we ask Kirsty how she managed in terms of dealing with her symptoms?
Yes, let's ask the patients, how was their low anterior section syndrome treated? How did they do?
I must say it's a breath of fresh air hearing Nicola speak about all the treatments on offer. Personally, I was not given a lot of information. I was told it will be about 12 to 18 months until you reach your new normal, and I was basically left on my own with that. So I think it's something that I just accepted and just thought, okay, this is what it is. I had hope that in time it may improve, and fortunately, after about the first 12 months, things did start to improve. But I've also found things like, over time, learning the dietary triggers, which make things a lot worse, with my bowel motions, with time spent on the toilet, and with aggravating factors, which can could lead to perhaps a wakeful night and being on the toilet a lot, and also with flatus, it's very important dietary factors, and I know what to avoid before I go to work for the sake of my colleagues and patients. Also, I found exercise really helpful. Running, I think, really helped the muscles with control. I think there was a bit of an adaption period where maybe things got worse for a little while my body adapted to that rapid metabolism brought on by running, but over time it really helped things. The gym for strengthening, and an unexpected bonus of being pregnant at the moment is that it's given me a holiday from the worst of my symptoms. So I think that extra progesterone has been really helpful, and maybe you could do some more research on that.
Yeah, we have here, you know, the researchers that will pick on that. And Jeannie, what were your strategies, and what was the treatment for you? What worked?
Great. So like I said, it's been 9 years since my reversal surgery. And I was a similar story to Kirsty, where I was given a couple of small suggestions using Imodium, using fiber supplements to try to bulk up. But I honestly think that some of those things actually made symptoms worse. I think that not knowing how to navigate that just confused my system more than anything. I'm like Kirsty. I found that exercise was good for me physically as well as mentally. It's something that I've practiced since soon after reversal surgery, and I tell people it's a medical protocol for me. I tell people don't interfere with my time to exercise. I need that. Dietary changes were important, specifically in the beginning. It took a food journal, really trying to clock what foods aggravated my system more. There were certain foods that will just never be eaten by me again. And it took time, because the transit time and the time my food was to digest, it was often I would have to eat very small portions of certain food to figure out if they were triggers or not. More recently, and again, my symptoms have lessened over the years, but have not dissolved, and in some cases have returned worse than before. I was telling somebody recently that I started waking up in the middle of the night, which was something I hadn't done in the beginning years. I changed my dietary measures to a reduced carbohydrate diet, which seemed to have very much reduced the flatulence, which has been a godsend, helped me lose quite a bit of weight as well. But it was the start of the waking me up at night that proned me to start using the irrigation. And it was suggested by somebody who had LARDS themselves, and with some patience and practice, I have found what Giacomo said, that I get now 36 to 48 hours of what I like to call freedom from anxiety and thought of where bathroom is. I can go and have dinner and not worry about looking around where I'm sitting in proximity to the restroom. So I still take Imodium on a daily basis. I feel my body has succumbed to needing it in order to have any type of formed stool. But I have been practicing irrigation now at home for about 4 months. And it's been, I've traveled more in 4 months than I could ever imagine.
Thank you. And finally, I invite people to look up Jacopo's algorithm on his DCR mini review, and on his up-to-date review, the review on the up-to-date site on low anterior section syndrome, where there is an algorithm that I have here in front of me. And going through this algorithm after irrigation, if that is not successfully controlling the patient's symptoms, there is a sacral nerve stimulation. And I know you have a lot of experience, Jacopo, on sacral nerve stimulations in these patients. Can you tell us what the results of sacral nerve stimulation in LARS are?
First of all, sacral nerve stimulation has a cost. So it cannot be a solution that we can propose in an early stage of disease. But we can consider it when all the other treatment failed, or the quality of life is not so good despite the other treatment. when the symptoms are chronic, so after maybe 1 year or something more. But the results are very interesting because saccharine neurostimulation may gain the control of the last part of the bowel, so improve the sensitivity and motor function of sphincter, may reduce urgency, may reduce may improve the continence. Not always he is able to improve the bowel movement control, and maybe this is the main failure, the main reason for the failure of saccharine neurostimulation. The advantage of this technique is that we have a trial period of about 1 month in which we can understand the effect of this treatment before to place the definitive pacemaker. So before to think to a new colostomy or new ileostomy to control the symptoms, saccharine neuromodulation should be considered because results are very, very interesting.
And so the test stimulation is a 1 month duration for low anterior resection syndrome. The advanced, what Medtronic calls the advanced stimulation, the
yeah.
advanced testing, it's a 1 month duration.
The duration is related to the time that we need to understand if is something working or not, and to lose the placebo effect, because many of these patients want to stay better, and so when you propose something like this, they believe in this solution and maybe can stay better even if the treatment is not working.
I was just going to ask you, Jacopo, what, in terms of the symptoms that you would predict might get better with sacral nerve stimulation, which patients do you select at that very end stage, having a huge impact on their quality of life? What symptoms make you think that sacral nerve stimulation may be the answer for that patient?
The better candidate is the patient with urgency and continence problem. If the patient go about 20, 30 times per day in the bathroom, maybe saccharine neurostimulation is not the solution for that problem. But if the patient have urgency, have a huge sensation related to the syndrome, have pain, have anal or neurorectal pain, have flatus incontinence, have stool incontinence, this could be a really good indication.
Finally, Ginny, you mentioned that you put together a patient support group in the United States, or you're part of a patient support group, and I was very thrilled to hear about this, you know, because that's the next thing I'm going to do with my patients is that tell them about these support groups.
Yes, so after learning from online research that my conditions were something that was named low anterior resection syndrome, I often did some research to see what I could find, and I thought, what if I just started my own website so that if other folks were out there Googling or trying to research, they could find it. Simply started a Facebook page and closed it and made it open to anybody who may be experiencing the same symptoms, only because they're very private and they're very, something that you obviously don't want to talk about with folks who may not understand. What it's grown to in just over 1 year's time is over 650 folks now who have either are large sufferers, is what they call themselves, or caretakers that have joined to get more information from other patients of what type of remedies and solutions they have found. Oftentimes it's more just, it's humorous, you know, you have to laugh about stuff like this. But that's where I learned about the irrigation. That's where one of the other members actually walked me through the procedure properly because my doctor could not give me proper advice. And I want to go back to what Giacomo said about giving people that freedom, giving them opportunity to feel better and that overall sense of wellness. I think some patients in the group have responded, just knowing there are others has helped their symptoms greatly. So just feeling supported is a well-being aspect. And
you were telling me that you can actually, through this group, I found very difficult in Chicago to find, stomatherapists who do rectal irrigation. Through this group, you can direct somebody to the specialist who does rectal irrigation, or you can try at least.
Or you can get patient specialists, which I know there's doctors in the room, so I should be careful saying that, but I find that people who have experienced it before know what your challenges are and can often give you advice. For example, for me, I was told by my doctor to use a bottle enema, which did not work. It actually made things much worse, so the thought of an enema. But in this group, I learned about the medical grade bag and retention nozzles and things that could help me hold the irrigation in.
And Nicola, do we have similar groups in the UK?
Of course, not just in the UK, but certainly from the international consensus we've been running, we know that LAS patients have the same problems worldwide. And there is enormous variation in their access to medical care, to the various treatments that are available. It's also been extraordinary, and Kirsty will bear me out here, that the mere fact that they've taken part in this international exercise has provided a peer support group in its own right. Kirsty, do you want to tell us a bit more about your plans for the peer support group following on from the consensus?
Well, currently, just from the patient meetings and information that's been provided to me throughout the year and emailing with the participants, they've shared a lot of things they've learned along the way, and I thought, what an amazing resource all these people who have the same syndrome sharing. So at the moment, I am asking all of our participants to provide their best tips, and I'm going to put together a document that can be shared at least among our group. But thanks to Jeannie, we can probably reach a much larger group as well as a file on the Facebook page. I've also shared the Facebook details of the page, because I didn't know about this page until one of our participants told me about it, and also others have been hearing about it, and everybody wants to know the name of it. So
we have folks from 11 different countries on the page. It's not just the United States, so it's from all over the world. Many from New Zealand, many from Australia, I find, Italy, everywhere. So
we should do a helping group for doctors. So.
And on this note, thank you, Jacopo. We'll finish this podcast from France, from Nice, from the European Society of Coloproctology. I want to thank all the participants, Jacopo Martellucci, Jeannie, Nicola Fernhead, and Kirsty. Thank you very much for being here and for your participation.
Thank you. Thank you.
The following is information shared by our patients for patients with low anterior resection syndrome. You can find the patient group Living with Low Anterior Resection Syndrome on Facebook. The website administrator and founder is Jeannie Wright, whom we just interviewed. On the Macmillan Cancer Support website, you will find a page dedicated to experience with low anterior resection syndrome and bowel irrigation. Plus, on the website bowelcanceruk.org.uk, first we'll have to subscribe to the forum and then look for the information shared by Yvette Person on regaining bowel control. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast.